Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial on the KE Report. And in this daily editorial, we are getting an update from Novo Resources and the president and chairman, Quentin Henny. Novo is traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol NVO and on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF. Now, Quentin, this update is going to be exclusively focused on the questions that I have received from my listeners over the past approximately 3 weeks. One of the more recent questions that I want to take care of first here involves the recent sale of shares, Novo shares, by Kirkland Lake. Now, Kirkland has sold approximately 2/3 of their block of shares. Quentin, start us off with a little background detail on this sale of shares and some of the transaction details.
Okay, look, to be real clear, this was not done, the share sale was not done in conjunction with Novo. We did not orchestrate it or, you know, enable it or whatever. It was totally done outside of Novo's directive, so it was arranged between Kirkland Lake and a couple of brokerage firms in Toronto. It basically, what they've done is they've taken their Novo block, they've sold units, which gives the buyer a share plus also a call option effectively to buy another half a share for a period of up to a year for a fixed price. The details of this, the transaction, I believe, were posted in one or two of the news releases by Kirkland Lake in recent time. So I would suggest, look, I to be frank, I don't even remember exactly what the dollar amounts were as far as the prices that were agreed. So I would urge people to look at that for more detail. But what I can talk about is, you know, this is a fundamental change for both companies. This is really a fundamental change within Kirkland, I would say, more so than Novo. Everything we're doing right now is on track. It's proceeding as planned as far as heading towards production and so forth. So nothing's changed within Novo. I would say this might reflect us, you know, some fairly fundamental changes within Kirkland. Now, I don't have inside knowledge of what goes on at Kirkland and, you know, the dialogue between the companies. We've maintained high-level dialogue over the past year or two. But I can clearly see that Kirkland is kind of reforming itself around the Ontario production scene. If you look, you know, the major transaction for them this year, acquiring Detour early this year, and now I think more recently they've also, you know, Tony Makuch has also talked fairly openly about aspirations of building production around Timmins. So it seems that Kirkland's aspirations, future aspirations, are focused in Ontario. And then I would point out that it's clear that Australia is not going to be a center for growth for them. If you look, you know, they have Fosterville Mines doing great, but they did not pick up additional ground, say, in Victoria. They have not restarted Cosmo, for example. I think that there were other opportunities that they probably had over time that they didn't pursue in Australia. It is difficult to work in two different time zones. You know, I've been doing this for many years, and you know, I can tell you flat out, it's hard. You kind of gotta stay up half the night or get up early, and it's not an easy task. But you know, that's Kirkland's vision for the future is clearly in Ontario, and we wish them well. We appreciate their help through the years. The financial support is really what enabled Novo to get where it's at, and we're appreciative.
So, Quentin, do you know or have some relationship with these funds that took those shares off Kirkland's hands?
Yeah, a lot of the funds are some of the same ones that took part in the placement tied to the transaction to pick up Millennium that was announced back in August. So, you know, this is really effectively an opportunity for them to double down. And then there's other funds I've been talking to more recently. Over the past, say, 5 or 6 days, I've talked to a large number of groups online here. And I think we're starting to see some new buyers come in, some rather interesting ones, you know, out of Europe and so forth. So we're seeing a new crowd of investors come in. I I hope that this opportunity provides a lot of those people who are entering, a wonderful opportunity to make a lot of money as we move forward towards production. I think by next year sometime, let's say we're talking next December, I think, Novo's going to be, have a very, very good future ahead of it with the production side.
Okay. So in terms of the production side, then not having Kirkland Lake on board or as on board as they were, that doesn't change anything with the move into production?
It does not. No. We've got, we are completely autonomous. There's no, we were not reliant on Kirkland for, any expertise or anything like this. We do have a fantastic team in Perth. We've hired a lot of people even recently, that we've talked about news releases to build up the staff to take the mine forward. So at this point, we have a great future ahead of us. I think we'll be very successful. And the fact that Kirkland has decided to take a step aside at this point, it really has no impact, material impact on us or our future.
Okay. Well, thank you for addressing that. I wanted to get that out of the way first. Let's now move on to some of the sorting questions that have come in. One question was asking, with the upcoming field trial for mechanical sorting going from a lab to a field testing environment, are there any unknown factors that remain which could impact the sorter from producing the same results that we saw in the lab?
Yeah, actually, that's a really good question, and I like the way it was worded, because this is truly R&D level stuff that we're doing here. Okay, the mechanical sorter that we purchased, the Steinert, is supposedly in Perth now. There was labor strikes at the docks here in the past week or so, which have complicated taking receipt of the containers. But we understand that it has landed in Perth. And we are gearing up for that program next year. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, we had a news release that discussed the various stages and timing of the trials that we're going to do at Karratha. Now, the question that you just asked is very much on our minds. Like, to pull this off, we have a lot of things we've got to look at to overcome. As far as crushing and screening and employing the mechanical sorter itself, look, they're all manageable in our view, highly manageable. But it will take creativity. So I'm not going to pretend. Like, one thing about mechanical sorters, they don't like wet. Okay, nothing wet. You don't want wetness in mechanical sorter. So we've got to make sure that we maintain a dry feed. Even screening it, you got to maintain a dry feed. You don't want things clumping up and stuff. Okay, so there's little aspects like that we're addressing. Fortunately, we're working in a very dry environment, so it's not too big of a challenge. We have done a lot of other work in the past, say, 2 or 3 months in the background. We're actually kind of testing out, like doing dry runs, if you will, using the mechanical sorter that Steinert has in Perth. So we've actually been practicing for our upcoming work at Karratha. And I think we have a lot of the bugaboos sorted out at this point. What's really going to be interesting is to see, how we mine this thing. That's an unknown right now. We haven't, actually gone in and mined the conglomerate. But we have to, we have to employ certain controls about how we mine it, how we effectively do grade control, even if it's a retrospective grade control. There's also, the aspects around crushing. We haven't done, field tests of crushing yet. But I think with the sorter, we feel very, very good about being able to manage and employ this test program without a hitch.
Okay. Now, in terms of the Tomra sorters, are those still in the picture for Novo?
They sure are. Look, Tomra and Steinert sorters both perform quite well. There's really no effective difference in their performance. The difference for us was that Steinert could turn a sorter around for us quicker and get so that we could get one in the field in Karratha. And that's largely what drove our decision. We do think that in the future there's going to be opportunity to use both companies for sorting, Karratha, but other projects that we're looking at.
Okay, perfect. Let's move into, again, more sorting questions, but now when it comes to recoverable percentages of fine grain gold outside of the swales and also on the swale margins. This listener noted that fine gold represents about 50% of the gold outside of the swales. So depending on how much of this is recoverable, that can have a big impact on economics. Any thoughts, any insights on this?
Yeah, look, because sorting is clearly going to be of use for the coarser grain gold. There's no question. As far as fine grain gold goes, because we can screen this material and effectively, you know, winnow out the fine fraction of the sediment, we should be able to treat that by conventional gravity means. So, you know, I see a kind of a hybrid combination where we use mechanical sorting and probably conventional gravity concentration for the finer gold. That's for the edging of material. So let me be real clear here. We're talking about kind of two different projects. Karratha is hard rock. We're going to mine, crush, green sort there. We've demonstrated recently that we can effectively sort all material that comes out of Karratha. Now, this question you're asking is more directed towards edgina, which is loose gravels and sediments. All right, so that we're going to screen and then sort, but also probably treat the finer fraction through more conventional gravity means.
Okay, so I guess we should get some of that information when mid next year, maybe?
Let me talk about this a bit. Look, the COVID has, you know, without going into an hour-long speech, COVID has been a challenge. It's been a challenge for laboratories in particular because of staffing and need to keep social distancing and so forth. Also, in Australia, they have the cross-border lockdown. So it's, you know, it's particularly challenging. But when we do these bulk testing, we have to send various fractions in for analysis. And the turnaround on some of our finer fractions in particular that require the laboratory prep and analysis have taken longer. It's, you know, it's just part of the frustration that everybody's experiencing right now. But we will get those. And yes, I think by mid next, well, probably earlier than that, probably by March or April, we'll have a pretty good handle on, I'm going to be clear here, we'll have our test work going at Karratha, but we'll also have a very good handle on the results coming out of Edgina. Now, that's not to say we'll wait till then to put out results from Edgina. We do anticipate having at least some ability to put some results out sooner than that, probably even maybe by late this year, early next year.
Okay, perfect. One other question, switching a little bit more over to Comet Wells. Why is the company keeping so much land to the east and south of Comet Wells when you consider that the open pit for Purdy's Reward / Comet Wells is going to be about 500, 800 meters wide? Why so much land on the east and south?
Well, that's a good question. Look, there are more horizons up section, so there is other potential. That's certainly one of the reasons. We probably will see, though. Let me back up. This year, in the background, we've had a team out doing reconnaissance level work on a lot of the tenements that you're talking about right now, and one of the goals of that is to determine which land we should pare back, which land we should keep. It is expensive to keep land, and we want to make sure that we do not spend a lot of our resources on land that we don't want. You know, where we decide to pare back, we'll make that decision sometime early next year. But there is mineralization in some of these other areas. So we don't want to just, you know, chop and get rid of any babies with bathwater, so to speak.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, let's move into a couple questions when it comes to the Sumitomo JV. Now, this listener was outlining that the JV is a little bit complicated, but we do want to first talk about the amount of money that Sumitomo still has to spend to satisfy their 40% earn-in at Edgina. For July 31st, the end of July this year, Sumitomo had spent about $5.2 million. In total, they need to spend $30 million. What's the process? How do you see this playing out and Sumitomo spending that remaining almost $25 million?
The bulk of that would probably be on the back of trial mining and so forth. And this whole earn-in is staged. It's actually a staged process. And it's not necessarily time to tied to a strict timeline. So the amount of money Sumitomo has spent to date, I don't have that exact dollar amount in front of me, but it's obviously a bit north of the number that you just mentioned. We'll call it, you know, in the neighborhood of $6 or $7 million. The money that's been spent to date is on the early stage exploration. But if we go to trial mining stage, which is what we're discussing right now, next year, that's where a lot of the further money would be spent. Now, Sumitomo has had some issues around cash flows this year. Like they've had effectively an investment freeze within the company that started about the time, shortly after COVID, really. I've been talking with the guys. They seem to be optimistic that those restrictions will end sometime early next year. So we'll see. But, right now I don't have 100% clarity on where they're participating right now. There's no question. But we don't have 100% clarity on their ability to invest the next tranche next year. Now, they're not required to either. You know, like this is an option for them. It's at their discretion whether they would like to increase their stake or not. And that's going to be dependent on their ability, you know, from their bosses to deploy capital.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. And remember, this is just for Egina too, right? But quick comment, how many square kilometers approximately does this JV cover? And do you see the potential of Sumitomo, or do they have the right to add any more land to this JV?
Yeah, we've kind of defined an area that we've agreed to work together. So if we pick up any lands in within that box, then we notify Sumitomo and they decide whether they want to add it or not. Right now, I don't have exact numbers, but I think we're talking like 2,500 to 3,000 square kilometers of terrace that's under our control, and that's part of this venture. We love working with the guys from Sumitomo. If we decide to pick up more ground or something, we will notify them and certainly, be happy to work on it together with them.
Okay. Any other projects, including potentially Beaton's Creek, which Sumitomo has provided some assistance on, that they could get a piece of?
Right now, there's nothing written for Beaton's Creek. Now, they did say, you know, if NOVO needs future investment once their financial conditions improve, that, they would likely be there for us. How it might affect Beaton's Creek. Look, Beaton's Creek right now is financed. We've got it fully financed through the recent, the debt structure as well as the equity placement that we did. So we don't see any need to draw further capital from Sumitomo, but they're good guys. Think of them as allies or friends. They are a good party to turn to for financial help.
Okay, now on to the production and cash flow questions. This one actually does relate to the last questions regarding Sumitomo, as one of my listeners outlined that once the mill is operational in the first quarter of 2021, it would appear that NOVO could finance Egina operations on its own, especially since NOVO will be receiving about $19 million from Calidus Resources. Any ideas on how this all could play into the Egina move into production?
Yeah, look, that's one of the selling points in our slide deck, for example, in our corporate communications. We see the cash flow that we derive from Beaton's Creek and the Nulligan operation as being able to catapult us and advance projects like Egina, also Karratha, don't forget. All right, so at Egina, yes, in effect, NOVO is going to be able to fund Egina on its own, to all the way to production. So it's, that's our story. We are going to be the Pilbara gold miners, and the whole foundation we're building that is on the Beaton's Creek operation.
A couple more just general questions, and I'll get you out of here, Quentin. One being, when is the first gold pour scheduled or estimated?
We are targeting, obviously, the first quarter next year, so it's not too long off. We're talking a couple of months. We've been taking bets in the office about exactly when. I'm going to say sometime second, third week of February is my best guess, somewhere in there. Okay, Australia, they love, it's summer down there, of course, and they love summertime to take off a couple weeks, holidays around Christmas. So it's not ideal to start up, the mill right then. We'll probably have to, start testing out the circuits and stuff sometime in January. And then I would say by mid-February, we should be in production.
Okay, perfect. And again, COVID, you never know what havoc that can play on things. But at least, yeah, you guys try to control your own destiny there. All right, final question here, Quentin. This is a bit more broad. You even mentioned at the start when we were talking about sorters and actually getting those into field testing, how that is almost, you know, R&D-like because it is such a different way of moving into production. Some of the naysayers, some of the bears on Novo have said, this is nothing more than a science experiment. What comments do you have for them?
Well, I'm not going to argue that it isn't a science experiment. We are doing very fundamental science, but we also are doing it with the focus to take this technology into production. You know, people who followed us and they can see the news we put out around sorting, they can see a natural progression to more and more effective sorting of smaller and smaller rock particles as well as smaller and smaller gold particles within the rocks. Okay, so we are down to the point where the machines that Steinert and Tomra have generated can see very small gold particles. We're talking gold particles, say 600 microns in size, maybe even a bit smaller. And we're able to sort, you know, as per the last news release we discussed, we're able to sort rock particles even as small as 2 millimeters. Okay, this is an astounding result. For those who are true naysayers, I'd say you might want to rethink that because the diamond industry actually employs this type of technology for sorting diamonds, and oftentimes diamonds down to quite small size. Okay, it's very effective. If you look at the diamond industry, many, many diamond operations around the planet use mechanical sorters. Why it hasn't, you know, translated over to gold? Well, it's probably because not too many companies are dealing with nuggety mineralization like we are, but we are the ones to champion this, to really build this from the ground up. We think this is going to be wildly successful, and we also see opportunity to employ it, you know, across other projects we have in the Pilbara, but elsewhere too. Look, you know, this is not specific to conglomerates, or you know, this is a technology that could be applied to basically any coarse gold system. And geologically, there are many, many types of coarse gold systems around the planet, most of which have been neglected because of that aspect. All right, so this technology, I will make a prediction, within 10 years will basically blow away a lot of conventional mining and processing. Okay, you're going to see this employed more and more, not just at Novo, I think you'll see it elsewhere too. And you're going to see mechanical sorting take a very important place in overall processing of gold ores in many, many types of deposits.
All right, Quentin, we're wrapping it up there. Hey, I continue to be a shareholder of this company. I've enjoyed following along with this story, and I'm enjoying getting all of these questions answered, too. So everyone, please keep on sending in your questions, fleck@kereport.com. If I happen to miss one, I know we had to skip a couple here just because we were running a little bit long, but I'll keep those handy, and we're going to keep this story going. So, hey, Quentin, I really appreciate your time on this Friday. I hope you have a great weekend, and I look forward to touching base with you probably before the end of the year.
Thank you very much, Corey.